Well, welcome and hi. Hello. Greetings. It's November 21st, 2023, 2019 hours Eastern Standard Time. Ward Green with you again. It's unfortunate because I've already done a complete video, but I forgot to turn the audio or plug it in. So, and it was very complex. It's a very complex study for today. And the problem is, we're going to skip Samuel, the reading. We're going to skip most of the readings, actually, of the scriptures. We're going to talk about chronology today and the importance of getting things lined up and all that stuff, which is at times it's not really impossible. It's possible to get on the wrong track, and we're looking for the one that fits. So we have Daniel Kahn's article about the death of, it's a great article from 2013, revisiting the date of King Josiah's death, which he determines, he proves it can't be 608 BCE, so it's got to be 609, which is the date determined also knowing the history of the Egyptian Semeticus, the Pharaoh Semeticus who died in 610 BCE and was succeeded by Necho, and Pharaoh Necho is mentioned in the Bible as the Pharaoh who killed, not just defeated, but killed Josiah, the king of Israel. So Semeticus preceded Necho. He died, according to Daniel Kahn's article here. It's a beautiful article from a book. And the book is called, it's from Brill, 2013. It's called In the Shadow of Bezalel, Aramaic, Biblical, and Ancient Near Eastern Studies in Honor of Bezalel Porton, edited by Alejandro F. Botta. Daniel Kahn writes this article, revisiting the date of King Josiah's death, page 255 of that publication, Daniel Kahn. And he concludes, and his is the most authoritative article on the subject, I believe, that Josiah died in 609. So, Josiah died in 609. So, but now we're in our Born and Raised article, okay, chapter 12, paragraph 3, I've studied all these different sources online regarding the crucifixion of Christ, but the different sects, the Essenes, the Sadducees, and the Pharisees, all of whom celebrated Passover differently, in other ways too, but differently in terms of what day they celebrated. And the Jews, some of them, celebrated Passover as 7 days, and others 8 days. And if you take the 8-day celebration, 14th to the 21st, inclusive, in the year of Christ's birth, 6 BCE, BCE 6, in the year of the birth also of John the Baptist, same year, when Zechariah served as a priest at the temple, April 10th of the year 6 BCE, would be the beginning of Zechariah's priestly division, his service for 8 days from Sabbath to Sabbath. They served for 8 days also. But in this year, it just depends which calendar you use to base Nisan 1, on which you base Nisan 1. For us, it wasn't a problem. It would be the last day of Passover, Saturday. But for the website that is used by some authorities, but Jewish website, there it is here. It's called CGSF, I think. CGSF.org. If you use their calendar in the year, that's the year 30, but we could take, okay, this is the year 30, which is the crucifixion year, which is the year we're talking about. Nisan 1 in this calendar is the 23rd, corresponds to the 1 and the 23 here of the Julian calendar of April. But we've said Cauchy finds a first visibility of April 24th, which is Arnice N1, and the 23rd is also the vernal equinox, which is in our reading of Born and Raised for today. The vernal equinox, the calculation of when the vernal equinox was, because the Essenes took vernal equinox as the first day of Nisan. So if that's 23, that fits perfectly with then 24 being the Sadducee, and also the Pharisee, Nisan 1, 24th. So sometimes this calendar on CGSF differs from the first visibility. Other times it doesn't. It's not a problem in 587 BCE. The other thing is, in 587 BCE, you can't have Av. Well, there's no problem in 587, but in 607 BCE, Av 9 does not fall on a Sabbath. So, according, that can't fit the Jewish tradition, which says that the temple was destroyed on the Sabbath. It was a Sabbath, and that fits 587. Av 9 is a Sabbath, and also Av 9, the Jewish tradition says, was the same exact day when the temple was destroyed on a Sabbath in 70 CE, so, which is 40 years after the crucifixion. The Av 9 fits very well for 70, and it also fits for 587 BCE as a Sabbath, and that's important. But it also fits the Jewish traditional year of 422 BCE, which is their date for the destruction of Solomon's temple. Av 9 is a Sabbath in 422 BCE also. But according to this calendar, I think I checked it according to this calendar, or did I check it? Maybe I checked it according to Cauchy, I can't remember. But you can see, it was this calendar. I checked this calendar, yeah. You can see that Sabbath is the last day here of the 7 days. So that's how you know. But it's fascinating because we don't think, we're not even interested in the Jewish traditional year for the destruction of the temple, which is 422, because it doesn't fit anything we know. It's not even close to 587. But that's their year, and it's got consistency with their tradition of Av 9 being a Sabbath. And once again, 607 BCE doesn't fit the tradition in the Talmud. I think it's Teanit 29a, I think is what it is, in the Talmud. Anyway, that's where you can read it. We may face many challenges in understanding this, but the simplicity of the explanation might be convincing. In 30 CE, the vernal equinox in our own app fell on March 23rd. Julian, which I say is 5 hours after midnight. No, that's actually 7 hours, Jerusalem time. So this is some kind of a mistake I'm going to be fixing, I believe. I've made a note of it. But it's still, it's very close. It's not much different. 5 or 7 hours after midnight. The accuracy of this is not very strong anyway for a calculation of the equinox. Well, we see that Solex 12 has the equinox as 30 minutes after midnight, March 23rd. Johnson, in the equation of time, has 3 hours after midnight, March 23rd. The average for Solex in the years 25 to 36 CE, spanning the year of the crucifixion, is about 17 minutes after midnight, March 23rd. These numbers are given for local time at Jerusalem. But we don't expect this to be accurate very much, so March 22nd could be the equinox, the problem, and then the 23rd could be Nisan 1, which we think is 24th because of in 12.3b paragraph here, we say Cauchy finds March 24th as the lunar visibility, the first day of visibility of the moon. That should be Nisan 1, according to first visibility. So we take it as 24, and then the 23rd as the Nisan 1 of the Essenes is what we take the 23rd to be, which we have to do. Because if we didn't do that, if we took the 22nd and then we used CGSF to get March 23rd as Nisan 1 for the Sadducees and Pharisees, if we took the 22nd for the Essenes as day 1, it's just, for one thing, it might be a little bit preceding the equinox, which they wouldn't do, but we don't know how accurate we are, so it could be March 22nd, but that would be wrong in another sense, that we'd then have Christ dying 4 days before his resurrection, which is not going to fit the prophecy. So we're not going to need to do that. We don't need to go that way. We can go the way that works in our chronology. And we have other reasons. We have another many reasons why. Why we know the crucifixion is in 30 CE. We know that. We know it's in 30 CE already. But we don't want to be... what's the word? We don't want to be dogmatic, but we don't want to be presumptuous. That's what it is. And so, when we look at today's scripture for today, little ones, Proverbs 13. By presumptuous, one only causes a struggle, but with those consulting together, there is wisdom. Right? So we're using all the different sources as if they're all consulting together with us, and then we come to find the one that fits our chronology, because we know the birth of Christ based on, well, not just the astronomy of the events that indicated that this was the ominous event that foreshadowed the birth of Christ. We know from astronomy in the Born and Raised article, we talk all about that if you want to read the whole article and get that. And we talk about the Essene Passover. Not only did the... There's so many ridiculous things happening all at the same time. Not only did the Essenes... You know what? I just realized it could work with March 22nd because the Essenes, they not only said that Nisan 1 was the equinox, they also made the equinox Wednesday. It was a Wednesday also. I believe that's true. Or it was always the same day, whatever the day of the week it was. And when you take it one day earlier, that means you're shifting the day of the week also. They didn't have, I mean... That's what I say. That's what we believe from the known literature of the Essenes. So it's crazy. It's really crazy. But it's very possible that it still works. But you have to understand it as being a different thing then. You see, they would assign Nisan 1 as Wednesday every year. There it says. This is from Born and Raised, Chapter 2, Paragraph 2. This is what not me, but people who did research in the Dead Sea Scrolls have said this. This is what we believe from their research. The people who studied the Dead Sea Scrolls, they found that Nisan 1 was a Wednesday every year for the Essenes. It was always the day of equinox, too. So Nisan 14 was always a Tuesday to them. So therefore, their Sunday is going to be moving also. So the fact that Jesus was raised on the Sunday, we don't know what day of the week Jesus' disciples said was Sunday. They just said the first day of the week, right? They said the first day of the week in the Gospels that he was resurrected. When the disciples, the women, went to bring the spices to the tomb and found Jesus resurrected, that was called the first day of the week in the Scriptures. I think it's Matthew 28 or something, whatever. It's in the end of the book of Matthew, somewhere in that. Where is it? Let's find out. This is exciting. We're going to look at Jeremiah soon. I want to look at Matthew. I want to look at the end of Matthew to see when it was after the Sabbath. Right. You see, so the Sabbath would have been also a different day. But Matthew 28 and 1, they went to view the grave to put the spices on the body and so on. But it was growing light the first day of the week. But after the Sabbath... The Sabbath would have been a different day, too, if we shift everything back one day for the Essenes. If we go one more day early, so it's 2 days before the Sadducees then. And that would imply that the trial maybe took longer, too. The trial of Jesus could have been then extended to make it fit the events. But we haven't had time to... I haven't needed to, and nor have I had time to consider all of that, which is immense, in terms of trying to understand every scripture in the Gospels and make sure that it's consistent with it. But it might fit better than what we have now, but what we have now fits well enough, and this is what the article's based on, is the understanding that the 23rd of March in the year 30 CE was Nisan 1 for the Essenes. Okay? That's what we based it on. And that's... we've done our Born and Raised for today. We're going to look at Jeremiah, but we've seen by presumptuousness, one only causes a struggle, but with those consulting together, there's wisdom. Proverbs, chapter 13, verse 10. That's our daily scripture for today, little children. Jeremiah, chapter 25. But also Proverbs 13 and 10. So you can look that up for today's scripture. The word that occurred to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah, that is the first year of Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, which Jeremiah the prophet spoke concerning all the people of Judah and concerning all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, this is what Jeremiah said, from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Amon, the king of Judah, and down to this day, these 23 years, the word of Jehovah has occurred to me, and I kept speaking to you people. Okay, and it goes on, of course, we know there's the 70 years prophesied, that he actually prophesied that Jehovah would send to Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, who's also called Nebuchadrezzar, same name, same person, and that he would destroy out of these nations round about and this land of Judah. He'd destroy the sound of exultation and the sound of rejoicing and all that stuff. He'd make it a devastated place, and they would serve the nations for 70 years in the Septuagint version, not the king of Babylon for 70 years, but the nations. But when the 70 years were to be fulfilled, he would call to account against the king of Babylon. The vengeance would be brought against the king of Babylon because he was the one who would do the destruction. But in the first part of Jeremiah 25, which you just read, we need to add these up. 13 plus 23 is 36 years. Right? 36 years. Now, if... the first year of Josiah in the genealogy is 639, minus 36 would be 603 for the fourth year of Jehoiakim. That would make the earliest year 1, 607 for Jehoiakim, which is possible, actually. But that would mean 603 is also the year 1 of Nebuchadrezzar, which we don't think is correct. It's either 604 or 605, depending on how you reckon it. But we also have a cross reference. But that's okay, because the 13th could be either, sometimes the 13th means the 14th in Hebrew. So it could be 13 full years, but it also could be 12 full years in some months. And the 23 years could be 22 years in some months. So it could be 35 instead of 34. Right? It could even be, 35 instead of 36 years. And it could also be 34 instead of 36 years. 34 plus 605 would be 639. But remember, there are differences in calendars. So year 1, 639 for Josiah, based on Nisan 1 as the start of the year. But there's the Jewish secular calendar that also goes from Tishri to Tishri, which is 6 months different. Everything can be done differently by different calendars, which makes 13th year of Josiah and the 23 years certainly less than completely concise. Okay? But we're in the ballpark. It works well. It appears to work very well in our chronology, so we're not going to be too concerned, I think. That's the way we should look at it. And we also don't want to be presumptuous. For Egypt, concerning the military in force of Pharaoh Necho, okay, Jeremiah 46 and 2, this is the only chronological statement in this chapter 46 of Jeremiah, but it's a brilliant or very important cross-reference for Jeremiah 25. Pharaoh Necho, who happened to be by the river Euphrates at Carchemish, we have to study, if we want to know this, we should really try to find out when was the Battle of Carchemish, okay? If we knew that, we'd know more. Necho, whom Nebuchadrezzar, the king of Babylon, defeated in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, the king of Judah. So, in the same year, the fourth year of Jehoiakim, which could be a different Julian year, because the calendar January to January, which is the Julian calendar, does not exactly coincide in every case with the Nisan to Nisan, or April to April, March to March, whatever, regnal calendar for the kings of Judah. There's an overlap, which is not entirely aligned, right? So the fourth year of Jehoiakim, this battle would have been in the summer. The battles usually were fought in the summer, very likely anyway. So that's it. The summer of the fourth year should be, if his year one was 608, starting in Nisan, then the fourth year has got to be 605. So, and that fits perfectly with the first year of Nebuchadnezzar being 605. But we have to be careful, because when we go back to Jeremiah 25, see, this could be the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, but it could be the winter of 604 prior to... wait a minute, what am I saying? Yeah, it could be the winter. This could have been later in year one of Nebuchadnezzar. It's not the official year one of Nebuchadnezzar, but later in... after he became king in 605 when his father died, in BCE 605, Nebuchadnezzar became king after his father died. We know that from many sources. I'm not sure how accurate we know it, or whether it's accurate enough to be certain of it. But that's we know his official year one very accurately is 604. So yes, we do know 605. That was his unofficial enthronement, or whatever, his official enthronement, but his unofficial year one. And we've assumed in the Born and Raised article that when any foreign king became king, when he got the crown, that was his year one, because we don't expect that the prophets would be too concerned to keep track of all of the, would, nor would they have opportunity to know all of the rules with regard to when a king reigned in a foreign land and all that. So they wouldn't be trying to do that. They just say he became king, therefore that's his year one. So the first year started in 605, but it could have been the springtime before March or April of 604 when this prophecy was made. It doesn't have to be the summertime, because there's no battle being fought in this prophecy. It's not talking about that. It's talking about the first year of Nebuchadnezzar could have been, therefore, could have been 604, even though it's the fourth year of Jehoiakim. He wouldn't become his fifth, or it wouldn't become, I mean, it wouldn't be four from 608, right? His fourth year would be 605, but it would overlap into 604 prior to March or April of 604. That would still be his fourth year, right? And 604 could also still be the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, which had begun when he got the crown in 605. That looks perfectly fine. So 604 is this time period when this prophecy occurred, possibly. The 13, okay, 604 plus 36 would be 640 for year one of Josiah, but we have his year one at 639, but maybe we're, you know, we don't want to be too presumptuous. Maybe we're wrong about the 639, or maybe, yeah, that's possible. But also, it's possible that the 13th means 12 years and some months, or it's possible 23 years means 22 years and some months. So there's no problem with our alignment. It's perfect, okay? But we don't mean perfect in the sense that we know everything. We have a great deal of... there's a large number of things we're not certain of. And that's the way it is with these ancient dates. And it's very hard to be day exact, which is what we want to be. But we have to be satisfied with what we can achieve realistically. And in Matthew chapter 1, I've had a rehearsal for this because I made a whole video already, so this is my second try. I thought the first try was very good, unfortunately, because now we don't have it. We don't have the audio for it, but I should have made a backup audio. That's what I could do. Every time I do this, I could do two audio, because I have a Zoom audio recorder. I could be using that every time just as a backup, but I don't even remember to turn on the audio. So, I mean, I could forget to turn on the Zoom too, I guess. I don't know. I didn't make a backup. Maybe I will in the future. But in Matthew chapter 1, we looked at the generations of Jesus Christ's adoptive father, Joseph. And we should note that in this genealogy, there's something that is completely inaccurate, that in verse 8, it's not accurate that Jehoram became father to Uzziah. It's not completely inaccurate, as long as you're aware that in Matthew 1 and 8, where there are three generations missing, really, Uzziah is the son of Amaziah, who's the son of Jehoash, or Joash. And Jehoash is the son of Ahaziah, in the footnote here, which is right here. Westcott and Hort omits Ahaziah, Jehoash, and Amaziah, but those generations are present in 1 Chronicles 3 and 17, or sorry, 3 and 11 and 12, 1 Chronicles 3 and 11 and 12, Jehoram his son, Ahaziah his son, Jehoash his son, Amaziah his son, Azariah, or Uzziah, his son. So, Clark's commentary says, omissions of this kind are not uncommon in the Jewish genealogy, so we don't have to worry about that. It's not uncommon that they omitted three generations. So this is proof also that what we said earlier about David's genealogy from Obed, between Obed and Jesse, we believe there are possibly quite a few generations missing there. We know Jesse was the direct father, the father of David. He was the actual father. But we don't know that Obed was the actual father of Jesse. And if we make him be the father, then there are very long generations all the way down. There's no way that that it's impossible, I guess, because if every man were 80 years old when he had his son in that line, it's possible. It's something like 70, 80 years, generations, for David's ancestors, if there are no missing generations, but there could be easily missing generations, so there's no need to assume a generation that long for every father, in other words. Although it's possible. A man even older than that can have a child, of course. But it's like in the book of Samuel, Samuel may have been over 100 years old when he died. It's not even mentioned in the Bible, but it's no problem. It's no problem because we know Eli lived 98 years, and it is mentioned in the Bible. They did live that long, those of them who were able to, I suppose they must have eaten well. They must have done something right to live that long, or they must have eaten well enough nutritionally and all of that. They must have been, probably they stayed out of the sun, right? To me, the sun is a big destroyer of health. That's why I don't like to work in the middle of the day outside. I like to work late in the day, because if I start in the morning, I won't be able to stop working, and I might work all day through the sunshine. And I think the sun does stun you, brightness, but it also can cause cataracts in the eyes. It destroys the skin over time. It destroys all sorts of parts of the body. I think exposure to the sun, it increases metabolism, or maybe it. I think it increases aging because it increases metabolic rate. I just don't like being in the sun. So these priests didn't like being in the sun either. Maybe that's what. But evidently, they spent a lot of time indoors. They were priests. They would be outside doing sacrifices, but they weren't outside very long when they'd go back inside again. And at least that's they spent a lot of time studying too, you would think, to know the scriptures and all of that. So how did they live that long? But not all of them lived 98, but we don't have any, it's amazing. I'd like to know how they lived long, but they had good food, like goat's milk and things like that. I've switched back to goat's milk. It makes a big difference because I don't get the phlegm associated with cow's milk. It's better. Goat's milk is just better, and I switched away from it because during the COVID, of course, I couldn't get out very often. I didn't want to shop very often, so I had to have cow's milk cream, which kept a lot longer in the fridge, so that's why I did that. Now, in the time of... oh, let's look at that. Maybe we can show you that. Oh, I'd love to show you that. Where is it? Where are you? Is that what it is? Let's see. Yeah, there it is. Priestly divisions. So these are the priestly divisions, okay? Let's see if we can make this larger. This is from something that was shown to me by a man who wrote an article. What was the article called? Pinpointing. Rick Lancer wrote an article in 2019 called Pinpointing the Date of Christ's Birth. Now, from that article, there's a table he mentions here, which I got also from one of his websites. It shows that Jehoiarib was the priest at the temple. Now look at this. What's that? Well, that's 5 BCE, right? 6 BCE. So, right, I'm in the year 6 BCE here in this table. Jehoiarib was the one, though, who began the priestly divisions. He was the first of the priestly divisions. And we see that on this list, Abijah is the 8th priestly division, right, who served in the year 6 BCE in October or something. But I'm going to correct his table and make it, instead of October 2nd, I'll make it September 25th. I'll move him back down one, because Jehoiarib was at the temple when it was destroyed. Okay, he was presiding, but he takes him as being the week after, starting on the destruction. I take Jehoiarib as the week before and during the destruction, on the last day of the destruction, on the Sabbath, the last day of service. I take that as the destruction, but I also take that as the prior week before the destruction being the week of Jehoiarib. That's how I do it. That's how we do it. We do it in our chronology because it fits. So that means Abijah is not April 10th. Yes, he is. He's not April 17th. He's April 10th is when he starts. Okay? And when Abijah here starts on April 10th in the year 6 BCE, right? Yeah, 6 BCE. April 10th, 6 BCE is when Abijah, when we shift him down to where Hakoz is, he starts on the 10th. And that fits with Nisan 21 or Nisan 22. But it works. Because in Luke chapter 1, Abijah's at the temple. And there's a multitude of people, which could be because they're all hanging on. They still have to stay there. Even if it's the day after the end of Passover. Even if Passover's over, it's a Sabbath. They can't travel. So they'd still be there waiting to go home. So they'd be there for one more day, and that was when Zechariah started his service. So it fits beautifully with the chronology that we have in the genealogy. Everything fits well, but we're still learning every single day more about it. It's November 21st, 2023. The time is 20:53 hours Eastern Standard Time. I love you very much. I'm Ward Green, and this is Crow, and this is Cassie. On my behalf, saying bye for now.